Hello and great to be with you on this Monday, the 27th of July. I trust you had a great weekend. I'd like to begin, let's talk firstly, by acknowledging traditional owners of the land where the program is broadcast. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Indigenous elders. And welcome to you if you're listening to Let's Talk through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Now today we're going to actually learn the ABC of a disease that is harmful to our liver, and it's of great concern, particularly to our mobs across Queensland. We're going to be joined by Caleb Meredith and Wally Anderson, who are both Indigenous health workers with Queensland Health, and Jodie Walton as well, an educator with Hepatitis Queensland. So stay with us for this important discussion ahead of World Hepatitis Day tomorrow.
Live deadly, stronger and longer. Did you know you can get Hep B from blood-to-blood contact and unprotected sex? Bubs can also get Hep B at birth. There is a vaccination and treatment for Hep B. Vaccinations at birth can protect bubs and keep our family safe. You could be sick and not know it. Left unchecked, Hep B can cause liver sickness or cancer. So let's look after our families and community. Don't be ashamed. Get a test at the AMS or your doctors today. Have a yarn to Child Health about your bubs' vaccinations. For more information, contact Hepatitis Queensland on 1300 Hep ABC. That's 1300 437. It's our mob's future. It's time to act. Station
sponsor. And that is the theme for this year's World Hepatitis Day, which is tomorrow, the 28th of July. It's time to act, or time for action. And we have a few people in the studio with us today here on Let's Talk to talk about hepatitis A, B and C. And we'll firstly begin with Jodie Walton, who is an educator with Hepatitis Queensland. Hi, Jodie.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Tell me, how long have you been working for Hepatitis Queensland?
About 9 years now I've been with Hepatitis Queensland.
And what is your role then as an educator?
So as an educator, we travel all around the state providing education from out into community to schools, out in correctional centres, out to community, all around the place really, wherever education is required really. And yeah, so it's a really enjoyable job.
All right. Tell us about hepatitis. I mean, you've got, we're talking about the three ABC. What is it?
So hepatitis B and C are transmitted differently, but we have about 500,000 Australians affected by hepatitis B and C. So hepatitis C is mainly transmitted just by blood-to-blood contact, and hepatitis C, blood and sexually transmitted. So it affects a lot of people and really affects Indigenous communities disproportionately. So something really important here.
So how many, say, in a state like Queensland?
So in Queensland, we're looking at around 70,000 people with hepatitis C, and just under 40,000 with hepatitis B. So really, really big numbers that we're seeing just in Queensland.
All right. And that works out to be about, what, three times higher?
Yeah, for hepatitis C, for Indigenous communities, yeah.
All right. And we talked about how you can get hepatitis C and hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. What other signs and symptoms of them?
Well, with hepatitis, it's really hard to tell. Like, for a lot of times, people with hepatitis might not actually realize they have hepatitis. So, when the liver is affected, people might feel really run down. So the liver might, so it, you know, filters things through our body. So people might feel run down, they might feel tired, they might not be sleeping properly, that, you know, skin might not be affected, their moods might be up and down. And these are, you know, these are things that, you know, affect everyone, you know, so people might not jump to go, oh yeah, I've got hepatitis, you know, because they're actually feeling really run down and tired. These are things that affect everyone. So not everyone will think, oh, I've got to go out and get a hepatitis test because they're feeling run down. But so often these get missed, you know, and people don't realise that they actually have hepatitis C or B, but their liver's actually still being affected, and they might be getting scarring or cirrhosis, and they haven't had that test, and it can be treated and it can be managed, but people don't actually know that they've got it.
And the liver, as you say, it performs an important function in the body.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, it's filtering all these toxins from our body, but it's also giving us back all our vitamins and our minerals, and it's, you know, regulating all our hormones, and it's doing so many important jobs, you know, in our body. And so without it, you know, we can actually get really sick and run down. And, you know, people with hepatitis, if it's not actually managed, if it's not actually treated, you know, people are really high risk of liver cancer.
So what are the risk factors?
So when it comes to hepatitis, so blood to blood, you can see some people might get it through tattooing, piercing, sharing injecting equipment, any kind of blood to blood. So it might be through a fight, might through any kind of where blood is shared between people. With hepatitis B, so hepatitis C is not in sexual fluid, but with hepatitis B, you might see people actually get it through unprotected sex as well, and really high risk from mum to bub as well, if nothing's done at birth. But we do have ways to prevent the bub getting Hep B at birth. So if they get that high dose vaccination within 12 hours of birth, it can go from like a 95% chance that the baby will get Hep B to only like a 5% chance. So if that intervention's done right at birth, you can just turn that right around and that baby won't get Hep B. So it's really important that that's communicated and that good antenatal care is actually done for mum.
What is the, how would you do, you know, describe the level of understanding or you know, knowledge about hepatitis B and C, particularly in the First Nations community?
Oh, well, we've had a few projects go through Hepatitis Queensland and through Hep Australia as well. We've had Indigenous workers go out to community, and unfortunately I think the knowledge level's really low, and I think there's just so many other health conditions and a lot of things that are going on in community that I think that, you know, sometimes that priority for hepatitis can be quite low in the understanding. Is there, and when you actually go out to community and talk about hepatitis, I think people actually sit up and realise and go, wow, you know, my auntie, my uncle, you know, they actually died of that liver sickness, and that I think people understand liver sickness and will actually think, okay, you know, I remember that kind of person that had that kind of pain in their liver, or that uncle or that auntie or that family member, and they might not have ever got tested for hepatitis, but there's a lot of cancers and there's a lot of sadness, I see, in community that comes from hepatitis that might not have been understood as hepatitis sometimes. And I think there's been a lot of confusion about transmission, and yeah, there's definitely a lot of more awareness that needs to come into community and to help people's health.
In the same way that we encourage our mob to undertake regular health checks to screen for things like type 2 diabetes, for heart disease, for certain cancers and that sort of thing, is it the same when you go in to do an annual health check that they screen also for hepatitis?
I'd love to see hepatitis up there.
So it's not part of the regular
testing? It's not part of the regular testing, and it really, you know, especially in Indigenous community with the high rates that are there, you know, to actually have screening for hepatitis, people need to ask for it. So, you know, for a bloodborne virus check, it needs to be asked for. So for that to be asked for in the general checks or to be part of the adult health check day, you know, would be incredible, because when we already have these really high rates in Murray communities for hepatitis, and when people have Hep B, about 1 in 4 chance people are actually going to die of liver cancer. So it's not something that's like, oh, people might get a little bit sick. We've got really high rates of death in community from this disease. So I think, you know, I remember one of the elders talking in one of our forums up north and said, you know, there's all this stuff happening in community, but there's this tsunami coming with hepatitis, you know, and we need to step up and listen with this, you know, because there's a lot of stuff happening, but sometimes there's this big tsunami coming here, and, you know, hepatitis is one of the really big ones that we need to take, need to sit up and listen with.
Mm. Speaking of tsunamis, of course, politicians and health administrators are concerned, and obviously people working in the field at the front line are concerned about the ice epidemic that seems to be sweeping across the country. Also, you know, the methamphetamines, how it's breaking apart some Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. That's, you know, the I guess that also brings to sharp focus the need for people to learn about Hep C.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I remember years back, and, you know, especially when we look up north in Queensland, you look at the Hep B rates, you'd say, oh, you know, about 2%, you know, in the city of, you know, Indigenous population, it goes up to 8% of Indigenous population have Hep B. When you go up north, about half the Indigenous stats are from Hep B in Queensland. So there's this really big population of people in North Queensland have Hep B. really, really huge. And when we go up there, we'd, people would say, it's Hep B, it's not Hep C. We're not seeing drugs up here.
Okay.
And that was the thing we hear all the time. So it's, we don't have Hep C up here. We're not seeing drugs. Don't worry about it. We don't want to talk about drugs up here. Can we just concentrate on Hep B? Hep B is family stuff. We want to talk about Hep B. And I would go, okay, that's fine. We'd always listen to community need and we'd always focus on what the community wanted. And that's how we always structured our education. So that's what we do. I remember one time on the island, you know, I was asking about drugs on Torres Strait. And I remember specifically one of the mob turning around to me and saying, girl, you know where you are. You know, we can't get bread here. You think we can get speed, girl? You know, you think about it. Think about where you are, you know. And, you know, so people would say, you know, like drugs is not something we want to talk about here. But that's changed, you know. And in, especially in the last couple of years, when we're going up and doing education up north, up Cape, up Yarraba, up all these places, people are going, whoa, we need to talk a lot about drug use now. And we're not. We're seeing our young people coming back positive. We're seeing drugs in our community. We're seeing ICE in our community. The health workers are saying we're seeing young people testing positive. And we don't have, sometimes in a lot of the urban environment, there's needle and syringe programs, there's harm reduction programs, there's rehabs. There's things that are set up to deal with young people who are using drugs and help them out. Up there saying, well, how do we address this? We don't have the structures in place, and they're really hungry for a lot of information about it. So we're seeing the change in the last couple of years, and we're seeing the health workers really coming to us saying, okay, we want Hep C information, we want this information, we want to help our young people.
All right. Speaking of health workers, in a moment we're going to hear from Wally and Caleb talking about the work that they do in the communities that they cover. You're listening to Let's Talk, Karen Durante with you. And I'd like to now bring into the conversation Caleb and Wally. Firstly, to you, Caleb, tell us about yourself, your name, your mob and your country, sorry.
Well, my name's Caleb. I'm from Rockhampton originally. My tribe's Emma Nation. I've lived in Brisbane area for about 10 years now, and I've worked at Ipswich Sexual Health with Wally for about 4.5, 5 years now.
Okay.
Okay, my name's Wally Anderson. My dad's tribe is originally from Ipswich, so we're the Yugaribal people. And mum's tribe is from up at Rocky too, just outside there near Warrabinda, the Gungaloo people. I've been working for health now for about 15 years as an Aboriginal health worker, and I did some of my nursery diploma and worked as a nurse for a while for about 3 years, and back at health working now, so it's been good.
All right. And you both work in the sexual health unit, is that
yep.
right?
Yep.
Okay. So is your focus predominantly on hepatitis B at this point in time?
It's part of our role. Like, we do sexual health, like, but that also includes bloodborne viruses like hepatitis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we also work out in the community, but we also go and visit jails and so the youth detention centre, Arthur-Gorrie. We do work across the board, you know, because our community, our mob moves around. So we're going a little bit here, a little bit there, and wherever they are, we go.
All right. So when you talk to mob about hepatitis, I mean, the eyes glaze over it, and you know, do you get that kind of reaction like Jodie did when she was up talking about her experience in the Torres Strait? That, you know,
it's interesting what Jodie said. You know, a lot of our mob, when they talk about liver disease or any of that kind of stuff, they go, "Oh, yeah, grandma or uncle or auntie, you know, they were sick and that kind of stuff." A lot of the young kids these days, when they come through, they're talking about it. They're not so much aware around it about, like, the older mob are. But, yeah, it's about saying to the younger kids, you know, if you're going to go and do anything risky, that might put you at risk of getting those bloodborne viruses. Just be careful. They say, oh, well, auntie or uncle wouldn't give it to me because they wouldn't, hurt me or harm me. And we say to them, you know, well, sometimes auntie and uncle don't know.
Yeah.
So if they don't know, then they don't know that they're hurting you. Because a lot of the young kids that we see at the detention centre, they're saying, you know, that they are injecting with auntie and uncle, but they're saying that auntie and uncle are introducing them to that, but auntie and uncle don't know that they got it. So unfortunately, yeah, they do come back sometimes positive for Hep C, and it's quite, you know, a tragedy because some of them, you know, they're only 15, 16. We do see kids that are younger where you talk about that ice epidemic where, you know, they do start introducing themselves to it by smoking, and then they gradually progress onto that injecting. And before they get to that stage, we try to say to them, you know, be blood aware and don't put yourself at risk. Again, it's, you know, not blaming anybody, but just be aware that auntie and uncle or whoever you might be using with don't know. So it's about that educating across the board where, you know, they're educating auntie and uncle, and auntie and uncle hopefully educating them.
Mm. Also with that, I was going to say with the talking about the ice epidemic and all that kind of stuff, like some of the, especially at the youth detention centre, we see kids come there from all over the state. So, you know, remote communities and stuff too. And I think a lot of that is to do with alcohol ban on communities and stuff. It's making kids turn to easy accessible drugs like injecting and all that kind of stuff because of the ban on alcohol. So I think it's actually made it worse, if anything.
Mm. Yeah, it's really easy, I think, when you might cost you $300 to get a bottle of alcohol, but $50 for a shot. You know, it's logical what the outcome is going to be of that, I think.
It was interesting, too, hearing Jodie talk about when she does go to the Torres Strait or any of those communities and they say, you know, we haven't got our injecting drug use problem up here, but we forget that our community don't stay in their one community, that they move around, you know, for football carnivals, for cultural reasons or whatever it is. And when they do go to those places, then they're introduced to different kind of things. And that's where that whole nature of where it crosses over, you know, that they go outside their community and they might do something that they wouldn't originally do back at their community. And unfortunately, that's where they sometimes pick up these kind of infections and then take it back home and don't know they've got it, and that whole cycle starts up again. So it mightn't be a problem where they see that, you know, they haven't got it in their communities, the injecting, but it's something that we should talk about. Especially, you know, if they're going outside and they're visiting different kind of venues and these kind of things, you know, are more accessible when they do go out and into the different areas. And, you know, you go with mob and all that kind of stuff. And if they're doing it, why not give it a go? And we're not saying that's wrong, but be safe when you do it.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly talked about the risk factors and the behaviours that put you at risk. And also about how it's transmitted. What about how it's actually detected? What happens?
So, okay, yep. So I'll go well. So depending where you live, you can go to a sexual health clinic, a Queensland government one, one of your AMSs, like Aboriginal Medical Service, even some places like it used to be called Family Planning, it's now called TRU. They will also...
True.
Yeah,
TRU.
It's
true.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, or your local GP. And like we were saying before, with the adult health checks and stuff, you actually have to...
request.
Yeah, request it and tell them. Like, it's about being honest. People aren't there to judge you. Mm. When you go into a health clinic, they just need to know what to test you for and what you've been up to. Everything's confidential. It stays there. But it's also trying to make it... don't be ashamed to talk about things. If you're doing something, just... own up to it, but do it safe.
Mm. Is Hep B one of those notifiable STIs that if you are, if you do come back positive, that you have to tell, you know, the health professionals have to have an obligation to advise your partners or ex-partners?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Well, you can notify your partners that you are hepatitis B positive.
Or partner, sorry. Yeah. I don't want to, yeah.
Yeah. But that's a choice. It's about the older own individual's choice of disclosing that kind of stuff. Well, we don't want to get it around to that negative part where it starts becoming a discrimination.
Yeah.
It's about being safe, and if you feel like you're safe and you're in that safe environment that you feel that you can disclose to your partner, then more, you know, go for it.
Okay.
And that's, you know, again, having that opportunity to be open and honest with each other.
Just add to that. There's different ways that we call it contact tracing when we're tracking down partners or, you know, possible spread of risk transmission.
Yep.
Like if people come into a clinic or something, like I said, it's all confidential. We have ways and means of anonymously texting people to say stuff like, you might have come in contact with hepatitis B, maybe you should go to your clinic to get a checkup.
Yep.
It's not saying that you got it from the fella down the road or whatever. So it kind of keeps that distance.
That'd be kind of scary text to receive.
It would, but it's kind of better to know so you can access treatment and stuff rather than not knowing and spreading it.
Fair enough. All right, so is it just a simple blood test?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And how long does it take before you find out?
The blood tests these days are really, really good and really, really fast, depending on which clinic you go to or how fast the lab is at getting the results. Mm. Usually we like to say about a week's time, you have your initial blood test, you have the week's time to find the test results. Hopefully, we do talk about window periods and when you're likely to get tested. The first test that we get you to do is called a baseline test.
Okay.
So it'll let us know from that point what your risk of behaviours was before to see what you are at that point. So if the test comes back negative, then you're negative. But then in saying that, if you did risk factors, we're saying about a three-month period, then we do another test in 3 months to check you for sure to see if you've got any of those infections.
And I guess that can present problems in itself that, the person might come back, the test might come back negative, and they say, well, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And not come back 3 months later. So I guess there's that problem that you've got to follow up people and make sure they come back in to get retested.
Like Caleb said, the most important thing when you come in is to be honest. We do go through risk factors of risk factors to tell us how high or how low your risk are of catching these kind of infections. And those risk factors tell us what kind of testing we need to do. When they do come to the clinic, we like to do a urine sample for different kind of infections, but the blood test is the one for the hep B and hep C. And those risk factors, injecting or any of that kind of stuff or tattooing or sharing any of those equipments will tell us, how likely or how, you might come in contact with those kind of infections.
Can I just add to that, Wally, just with the risk factors thing, with hepatitis B especially also, we add a big question, have you had sex overseas? There's in some countries overseas, there's higher prevalence of that kind of stuff, in Asian countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you might have had sex here, but are they from that country?
All right. Okay. Mm. So what happens then if you do test positive?
Okay, we do the pre and post counselling and say to them, if you do test positive for this, how would you react and what kind of issues would be around that?
Mm.
But it's about being healthy then, looking after yourself, looking after your liver, eating regular diets, minimising alcohol intake, and if you are injecting or any of that kind of stuff, being safe around that kind of injecting, using your own equipment, not exposing anyone else to it, but basically keeping yourself healthy to keep that virus at a minimal level where it doesn't harm your liver to a point where, unfortunately, because we've only got one liver, we need a new one if anything happens to the one we've got.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest points that we like to look at.
Mm. Shouldn't have turned their phone off. Sorry.
And we've got really good treatments now available for hepatitis B as well. So if people are positive, they can actually access antivirals as well. So there's a medication people can take which actually takes the level of virus right down. So it doesn't actually continue to cause any damage to the liver. So what happens instead of the virus kind of going up in the body and potentially putting a person at risk for, high risk for liver cancer down the track, you can take these medications and it's just one pill a day, and then they can basically eliminate that risk for liver cancer down the track.
All right. Yeah. And that's part of the treatment regime?
For hepatitis B, yeah.
For B, okay. Yeah. What about for C? Is there any...
So for C, we're at a really, really exciting change. So some people who know about hepatitis C treatment will know about pegylated interferon and ribavirin, which is basically about a 6 month treatment, and it's got about an 80% chance of a cure when people do it. So it's actually really effective treatment, but it's actually very hard to do. So a lot of people who have been on treatment will know it as a treatment that makes you feel really, really crook, So a lot of people compare it to something like a chemotherapy or very sick. Some people don't feel that bad, and some people are okay with it, but a lot of people feel pretty crook when they're on treatment. But we're just at this big change with hepatitis C treatment. So there's these new medications that have been being used overseas in Europe and in the US, and they've just got approved through PBAC, which is the first stage, which says these are the medications we should use in Australia now. And then the second stage is to get them approved through PBS, which means they'll be free to use. So we're in that first part now of like, yes, these are the medications we'll use, but they're not on PBS yet. So it's just in that negotiation in between of how much will these cost and getting them on the market.
What does that mean for somebody now with hepatitis C?
Right now, if people go through, they will probably be put on the standard medication of the 6 month treatment with an 80% chance of a cure. Or if they're healthy and well, they might be put on a wait list to start on the new medications when they're approved. If they're very, very sick, they might be put on like compassionate access, and they might get early access to these medications if they can't take the current medication. So there's a bit of a mix. But what the new medications are about 12 weeks on treatment with just no interferon, just a pill.
So half the time.
Yeah, just very short time. Basically a headache, not hardly any side effects. So basically people won't feel the kind of same side effects that they used to. And so it's 12 weeks, very minimal side effects. And we used to say it was about an 80% chance of a cure, and that's going to be more in the range of 90-95% chance of a cure when people do treatment. So it's a really, really exciting time in hepatitis C treatment, and we've never seen any changes like this before. The other big recommendation they made is to make it a S85 drug, which basically means that it won't just have to be in the hospitals or specialists that will be able to prescribe. Community doctors will be able to prescribe, they think that's the direction it's going to go, which means that more AMSs might be able to prescribe Hep C treatment, more community health centres, GPs might be able to prescribe Hep C treatment, which is going to be a massive difference, especially for people in regional and remote areas.
I see Wally nodding his head there. Do you want to add to that?
Oh, just with the community stuff, you know, about shared care and I suppose that kind of way that people are looking at. We've got an exciting medical centre over at Inala there that led to understand that they do treatment from start to finish.
Mm.
Where if they do come out to our area at Ipswich, we usually send them up to Toowoomba to the
Kobe House
to get them to get their treatment up there, but it's in a shared care way where they go up there for the initial treatment and then they could come back to our service and the nurses can treat them at our service and monitor them and blood test and make sure everything's going all right and that they're staying healthy and following, you know, what they have to.
Mm. Can I just add to that too, like it's important to come in and get your initial blood test and stuff, because some people are actually lucky enough to clear it in the first year naturally. Mm. Their body will do that.
Yeah.
So the come back for the follow-up and all
system,
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And I'll get Jody to talk about this, but even if you do come back with Hep C, you'll have to do follow-up blood tests, but some blood tests will still tell you you've got Hep C, but you need to do the antibody test.
Yeah, so yeah. Basically when you do a Hep C test, when they just do the antibody test, that's basically what that says is you either have Hep C or you used to have Hep C. It's just a marker for Hep C has been in your system at some point. Like every cold, every flu, everything you've ever had, you have antibodies for.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean you still have the virus. So that's the first test they do. But that doesn't mean you still have it. So, you know, as you were saying, you know, some people will clear the virus in that first year. So so if someone's ever been tested for Hep C and got a positive result, that doesn't necessarily mean they still have it. So if they've just had that one test, they definitely, definitely need to go back to their doctor and get the second test or to the AMS and get that second test. And that second test is called a PCR test or an RNA test. So if anyone's ever been told they're positive, make sure they've had two tests.
Mm.
So the second test is that PCR or RNA test, and that test is actually checking for the virus. So if that second test comes back positive, then that's a test that says, yes, you actually have hepatitis C. And if from that test you should get the referral to go, yes, do you want to look at treatment? Do you want to clear the virus? Or do you want to look at management and health management, cutting down alcohol, healthy living, looking at exercise, diet to actually manage it? Or do you want to do treatment and clear it? So, but you need to get that second test to see whether the virus is actually there, because that first test just says it's been there at some point. It may or may not still be there.
I've been speaking with Jodie Walton, an educator with Hepatitis Queensland, and also Caleb Meredith and Wally Anderson, Indigenous health workers with Queensland Health. They're based out at Ipswich. We'll continue our discussion with Caleb, Wally and Jodie in just a moment, but we'll also hear from people who have actually tested positive and who are living with hepatitis, and stay with us for that to, I guess, hear it straight from the horse's mouth, as it were.
Hey, you mob. Live deadly, stronger and longer. Have you ever shared anything that could have blood on it? Share blood with ceremonies, tattoos, piercings, razors, toothbrushes and syringes? You could be sick and not know it. Hep C is only transmitted by sharing blood. A lot of our mob have Hep C, but Hep C can be treated and cured. Left unchecked, Hep C could also cause liver sickness or cancer. So don't be shame. Get into the AMS or get a test by your local doctor. For more information, contact Hepatitis Queensland on 1300 HEPABC. That's 1300 437 222. It's our mob's future. It's our mob time to act.
Station sponsor.
You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are four times more likely to have Hep B and three times more likely to have Hep C. In North Queensland, around half of the people who have Hep B are from Indigenous communities.
It's a big health issue that affects all part of our community, young and old.
You or your family could be affected by Hep B or Hep C.
It can make your liver sick and some people get cancer from it.
But both can be prevented, managed and treated.
Don't be ashamed. Get a test. Talk to your doctor about treatment for you or your family.
Hep B and C are health conditions and not a reason to discriminate.
Call Hepatitis Queensland for more info on 1300 Hep ABC. That's 1300 437 222.
It's time to act.
Station sponsor.
And we've got Jodie Walton, who is with us from Hepatitis Queensland, and we'll make sure she repeats that number for us before we go at the top of the hour. Jodie, we've actually also managed to grab a couple of people to talk to us who have been, who have tested positive for Hepatitis C and have also actually cleared it as well. We've got Tanya with us, and we've also got with us an Indigenous man from Brisbane who's successfully gone through the treatment and cleared of Hep C, but he's asked to remain anonymous. Tanya, welcome to Let's Talk.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, Tanya, when did you find out you were positive?
I found out I was Hepatitis C positive baby, and I just was really run down, really unwell. Couldn't seem to get the energy to do anything, and yet I'd, you know, been fine with other kids. And then I went across to the doctor and they tested me for everything, and I came back Hepatitis C positive.
Did that surprise you?
Oh, I guess it did and didn't in a way, because I did have some tattoos done, you know, when I was younger and had a previous experience with drug use. So I knew, I guess, once it came through that, you know, I had put myself at risk at some stage.
So what were your sort of initial concerns?
Oh, biggest concerns were about the kids. And, you know, if I passed on the disease to them, that was really freaking me out. And then when I heard about the treatment, so this is years ago, I did the first lot of treatment. It was monotherapy and 11% success rate back then. It was terrible. And they told me I had between 2 and 10 years to live back then as well, because they didn't know what they know now.
So did you get the kids tested and did they pass and come clear?
I decided to not get my kids tested until they were, like, at an age where they could make that decision. And it's a big deal. It's a pretty heart-wrenching thing to ask your kids to do. But I went on to have another 4 kids. So I had 7 with hepatitis. So, yeah, and I've only had a couple of them go and get tested, and they've come back negative because they're older now.
So that must have been a sigh of relief for you.
Yeah, well, sigh of relief for them, because you don't want them going through the disease and the treatment.
So what kind of support did you have or seek?
Luckily, I found the Hepatitis Council, and they were fantastic. Lots of support through them, and also I went online to a hepatitis sort of support group online, and I've met friends from that, and we all went through treatment together. You go through highs and lows, and some cleared, some didn't, some are still going through it. It's a fantastic world out there on the internet, and I really got a lot out of that support group online.
Australasia? Is that Hepsi Australasia, Tanya?
Oh, gosh, it slipped my mind now, the name of it, that it was... Jodie might remember. Yeah. But it could be, but sorry, I can't remember now.
So how many treatments did you actually go through to clear it, Tanya?
Oh, my story's a bit unusual. I was on the monotherapy in 1995. Then I waited and had all the kids, and so it wasn't until 2006 that I went again onto combination therapy, which is interferon and pegylated interferon and ribavirin. And I went on to that for 24 weeks and wasn't clear, just really unwell, very unwell, and didn't clear. And then the PA hospital in Brisbane had a experimental drug called aglufenide disodium, and I just went on that for a three-month trial period, and then that got my viral load right down, and I thought, well, this is a good sign. But then a month after that, it was up to the millions, and I thought, my God, my life's over. And then luckily I went on a compassionate treatment again, and went on the same combination therapy, and I cleared after 48 weeks.
So, Tanya, when you found out that you had hepatitis C, how forthcoming, I guess, were you with that information? Were you concerned? I ask this question because I wonder whether you experienced any stigma or discrimination as a result of testing positive.
Oh, certainly. I didn't really know who to tell or whether I had to tell, you know, because you just don't know whether it's something that you've got to let people know. I let my family know, of course, and the kids, like, because my kids, the girls wanted to wear my earrings and use them razors. And so for years, I was just completely paranoid about the kids touching anything. And then it wasn't until I kind of got a bit more information, especially from the Hep Council, who I had to tell and who I didn't have to tell. And I just disclosed to who I felt safe about disclosing to, because there's, you know, there's not many situations you really have to let people know.
Any final thoughts, any advice for people who might be engaging in risky behaviour that puts them at risk of contracting hepatitis C?
Oh, yeah, get tested. Get tested as soon as possible. And if you're in a place where you feel like you can go through the treatment, it's very, very difficult. It's low-dose chemotherapy over a long period of time, and the drugs are getting better, but, you know, there's a lot of... You came up with a lot of health issues. I had sores all over my body. I had a hacking cough. I had psychosis about 19 weeks in. It's terrible what the treatment does, and it's only now that I can sit back and say it was worth it. So I'd say when you're going through that, you've really got to be in a good place to be able to go through it.
Well, before you go, Jodie has one more question for you.
So, Tanya, what's been the impact for you now that you've gone through treatment and you're cleared? What can you say is the impact for you actually clearing the virus and the impact in your life?
Oh, amazing. I used to have really severe fatigue, terrible fatigue, and I don't get that fatigue anymore. I now have what I guess everybody else has when you get tired and exhausted, which that's pretty amazing, considering I couldn't do some things. It was that bad. I remember thinking I had chronic fatigue syndrome early on, and it was the hepatitis that did that. It's brought a freedom to the kids around, you know, I don't have to be paranoid about blood spills and things like I used to be. And I don't know, yeah, freedom. Just a freedom from knowing that, that I was at risk of sharing that with others and the impact upon my liver over a long term.
Well, we appreciate your time, Tanya, and coming forward and talking about your experience.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Jodie. Thanks, you too.
Tanya there, who has tested positive for hepatitis C but has now cleared it after somewhat of a long time for Tanya. We've also got with us an Indigenous man from Brisbane who has successfully gone through the treatment for Hep C and cleared it as well. Thank you for coming forward and having a yarn with us.
Yeah, no worries.
Tell us, when did you find out you were positive?
I think I found out roughly about 8-9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was involved in high-risk behaviour, drug use. Every now and then I'd go and get a blood test. So I went one time and the AMS contacted me and told me to come in, and I went down and they said that I was positive for Hep C, which totally blew me away because I was very cautious with, you know, with the drug use and stuff that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
No sharing and that.
Yep.
So, I was devastated when I found out.
What happened, did you speak to somebody about that, you know, the way that you were feeling, because it was such a shock?
No, I didn't tell anyone.
Mm.
I kept that a secret for years. I suppose because of, I felt embarrassed about it, shameful. I suppose I had my own sort of stigma that people wouldn't accept me because I now had this virus. So yeah, I kept it a secret. Nobody knew my partner or family member. Nobody.
Mm. What did you know about hepatitis C at that point in time?
I knew that it was attacked the liver. Other than that, not too much. Just that it attacked the liver, and that you could transmit it to others through blood to blood.
Mm.
That was about it.
Were you experiencing any symptoms at all?
I think way back then, because I don't know how I contracted it exactly, but I remember a stage here where I had dark urine.
Mm-hmm.
For a while.
Mm.
And some stomach pain.
Mm.
Maybe a little bit of a cold, flu-y type thing, but that was about it.
Mm, and you probably put that down to just being sick,
yeah.
Cold and flu, not to anything sort of, you know, related to hepatitis C.
Yeah. I didn't connect the dots and had no idea that what was going on with inside my body at the time.
Mm. So you went and sought treatment then once you found out that you were positive, or did it take some time for you to adjust to the knowledge?
Actually, I went back worse on the drugs because I thought I was going to die.
Mm.
So I actually went harder, and because I had that attitude where I didn't care type thing, I thought my life was over, basically. Mm. So went hard for, you know, a year or two, and then treatment through AMS was offered. And I sort of stopped then and went, I might give this a chance.
Mm.
I'll give it a go.
What turned it around for you then?
I was sick and tired of that lifestyle, for starters, which is very, very bad. And I recommend anybody to not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, or you, Murrays. So I think, you know, family, kids was probably the reason why I thought, you know what, I'll do it for them and I'll do it for me.
Mm.
So that's why I thought I'd pursue that treatment.
So how many courses did you go through before you cleared it?
Just the one.
Just the one?
Yeah.
All right. And how has your life changed, or has it changed?
I suppose because when I had that virus, I was really withdrawn. And I just sort of stuck to myself. But now I'm out there, you know, I don't really care anymore. I feel much more positive. I think my whole mentality has changed, and I feel like I'm alive again. And I would highly recommend anybody do the treatment if they get an opportunity.
Right. I appreciate you coming in and telling us of your experience. Just to wrap up, we have got nearly just a minute. Caleb wants to say something.
Yeah, just a final little thing. Was doing a plug on the AMSs in Queensland Health that offer testing and treatment and stuff. I forgot to mention Two Spirits. They also, you know, if you just want to ring them up and talk to them about things. So there's an office down here in Brisbane with Phil and Brett, and up in Cairns, I think it's Aroni and Nikki. So, yeah, give them a call also. And another thing, testing is free. So it's no cost. Walk in, rock up, get a test. It's not going to cost you anything.
Right. And the Hepatitis Queensland phone number, I think that's all we've pretty much got time for.
Yeah, so 1300 437 222, so that's HEP ABC. So please give us a call. We're happy to put you in touch. It's a really serious health issue. Over 1,000 people dying every year, so please get a test and get some support.
And a lot of activities, I imagine, happening throughout Queensland for World Hepatitis Day.
There is. There's a ton of activities happening all over the state. Please go to our website at Hepatitis Queensland, and they're all on the website and all on the Facebook page. There's a ton of activities happening, 23 different grants actually happening all over the state.
All right. Thank you very much to everyone for tuning in.